Good morning, everyone. So before I go further, I want to offer a dedication. I would like to pause and acknowledge all of our ancestors. I want to acknowledge our land ancestors, the Dakota people whose land this is. And on this Sunday before Martin Luther King Day, all of those who gave their lives for civil rights in this country. I want to acknowledge our blood ancestors, who are all of the people who loved and raised us and are responsible for our being born and our being here. And finally, our spiritual ancestors, all of our teachers from India, China, and Japan, and the Japanese Americans who brought Soto Zen with them when they immigrated to the US and who suffered a lot at the hands of our government. We should never forget that we are part of the past, present, and future. And I vow to transform the suffering of the past with my action in the world today. So, the title of my talk today is This Very Body. And of course, this very body is having some congestion this morning, so I apologize if I have to pause and take care of this. But I want to talk about the end of a very famous poem by Hakuin called The Song of Zazen. And if you'd like to hear a wonderful set of talks about the Song of Zazen, Sosan spoke on this during our July session at Hokkyoji, and all those talks are online. But today, I just want to talk about the very end, and I'm going to read it. So you can just, I would invite you to close your eyes and just receive these last two stanzas. How vast is the heaven of boundless samadhi! How bright and transparent the moonlight of wisdom! What is there outside us? What is there we lack? Nirvana is openly shown to our eyes. The earth where we stand is the pure lotus land, and this very body, the body of Buddha. So I wanted to begin by letting you know just a couple of things about the author, who's one of our spiritual ancestors. So Hakuin was a Japanese Zen Buddhist teacher. He's affiliated with the Rinzai School of Zen. So we're the Soto school. So he's kind of our cousin. He lived from 1686 to 1769, and he left over 80 successors. He was a gifted artist, and we have over 50 written works by him. He was known for being really strict with his monks, but also very kind to lay people and children. And he really revitalized and reinvigorated Zen practice during his time. And he left us this beautiful, beautiful poem. So I wanted to talk about this poem for a couple reasons. One is that this very body is very much on my mind. About a year ago, on January 11th, I woke up in a very different body than the one I had on January 10th. I had a heart attack, a sudden heart attack. I guess heart attacks are always sudden. This was sudden. And everything kind of shifted in my body in just a moment. And you have this parade, especially when it's a little, mysterious or unknown what exactly happened, which in my case it kind of was, because it wasn't a typical kind of heart attack. And so these doctors and different people sort of parade through your hospital room with all this information. And I could feel over and over, every time I heard something that was quote unquote good news, I would feel my, like almost a hand come out, like grab that. Oh, good. Maybe nothing's really that wrong. And then every time I would receive something that was maybe so-called bad news, I would feel the hand go push. away from the bad news. So, you know, the gift of an experience like that, which I'm sure many of the rest of you have also had some kind of health thing come up, is that it sort of tips your fixed thinking about your body on its head. And it really has caused me to reflect a lot about how is this very body the body of Buddha, a body that I don't always feel so happy with, that is sometimes not how I expect it to be, that's unpredictable. How is this very body the body of Buddha? Many of us right now are also engaged in a class called Begin with the Body. And this class is exploring the teachings in Rezpa Menakin's book, My Grandmother's Hands, which explores the history, trauma, and healing of white bodies, brown and black bodies, and police bodies in our society. Rezpa says, white body supremacy doesn't just live in our thinking brains, it lives and breathes in our bodies. And he feels that we're never going to overcome this problem in our society through discussion, training, or anything that's cognitive. Instead, we need to look to the body and the embodied experience of trauma. So, once again, I find myself asking, how are our bodies that are individually and collectively traumatized by racialized violence, how are these bodies the very bodies of Buddha? And a week and a half ago, I saw, like most of you, a lot of bodies interacting in our capital in very troubling ways. How are these bodies the bodies of Buddha? So here we go, considering this a little bit. And before I move forward with my Dharma talk, I would like you to just take a breath and return to this very body. Maybe two breaths. So, in Mahayana Buddhist understanding, which is the stream of Buddhism that Zen is nested in, the Buddha can be conceived of having three bodies: Nirmanakaya, Dharmakaya, and Samudrakaya. The names aren't that important, but I'm going to talk about a little bit about each of those bodies and how coming to understand these bodies has really helped my practice of living with this question of how is this very body the body of Buddha? How are all these bodies that I'm living on the planet with the bodies of Buddha? So the first body of Buddha is called Nirmanakaya. Kaya just means body. And this is the Buddha's body, like the body of Gautama Buddha, the actual Buddha who had a body that was born in the form of a baby and grew to adulthood. It had the same basic form and function of every human body that's ever been born. And that body experienced physical pain, illness, old age, and death. And we don't sometimes like that very much. It could cause us some fear and anxiety. But this is the Nirmanakaya body. And there's a very basic and deep survival instinct in these bodies, which I really touched after my heart attack. I remember very distinctly sort of checking in deeply with how it was in my body, and I could feel that life force. And I remember thinking to myself, well, I guess I'm not dying. You know, I could feel that just power there. And Rezpa talks about this too, about how what the body most cares about is safety and survival. And when something happens to a body that's too much, too fast, or too soon, sort of sounds like a heart attack. It overwhelms the body and it creates trauma. So throughout the book, Resma uses this beautiful term to describe a healed, or I might say a healing body. He uses the term settled. And I would say our capacity to settle and to offer that subtleness into the world is a tremendous gift, not just at this time, which seems especially desperate and especially in need of settling, but really through all time. There really isn't a time where that isn't helpful. And we're really fortunate because our practice offers so many ways to bring subtleness to our body. So the practices of mindful breathing, of course, sitting meditation, chanting, bowing, speaking and listening from the heart. Those are all ways we cultivate subtleness. So that's really a way that we can receive and express Nirmanakaya Buddha by practicing subtleness with our physical bodies. So before I go on to the other Buddha bodies, though, I think one of the challenges in practicing with Nirmanakaya Buddha is our urge to create a fixedness can come up. And so in the paragraph right before what I read, Hakuin kind of anticipates this. And he says this kind of interesting thing. He says, our form, now being no form, in going and returning, we never leave home. Our thought now being no thought, our dancing and songs are the voice of the Dharma. So as we dance and sing, as beautiful Nirmanakaya Buddhas, who's dancing and singing? So I think it's really important we don't forget that while we're settling, while we're being present with our life force, we also can remember to hold that very lightly and remember our form is also no form. We never leave home when we go and return. So the second, so we've got three Buddha bodies. The second Buddha body is called Dharmakaya. So we're pretty familiar with the word Dharma. Dharma can mean teaching or truth, or it can point to kind of the absolute or ultimate dimension. So we're also this body. That's what I was maybe talking about just a moment ago. So right after my heart attack, I wasn't just aware of Nirmanakaya Buddha, that kind of life force in my body. I was also present with Dharmakaya, particularly in its manifestation as the truth of impermanence. I could really, really feel everything shifting. Everything changing, nothing solid, nothing truly fixed. And all around me, I could sense all of the other people in the hospital together with me, living and dying. So if you're on a cardiac ward, there's a lot of codes going on. It's just the way it is. So I could hear that. I could feel that. But I'm really happy to let you know you don't have to have a heart attack to touch Dharmakaya Buddha. It's very good. Dharmakaya Buddha is arising every moment. And it's not happening outside of our bodies somewhere else more fabulous where we wish we were. So I'm always thinking that a little bit, right? And this is Dharmakaya Buddha is somewhere else. It's happening somewhere else. But it really isn't. And I thought, while I was working this talk, I thought, well, why is it that I have this persistent idea that I have to go somewhere else? that I somehow have to smooth out and overcome this body here in order to experience awakening or permanent, you know, seeing impermanence or understanding no fixed nature. Why do I think that happens somewhere else? And I really believe that one of the elements of white supremacist culture that we've all absorbed is this preferencing of thinking over being, of mind over body, of rationality over intuition and deep knowing, this labeling of bodies as dangerous and dirty and bad, especially, there's a long list, female bodies, dark-skinned bodies, queer bodies, differently abled bodies, right? So that we have this deep conditioning that makes this very difficult. And the discomfort that arises in my body in relation to all of this is also Dharmakaya Buddha, because it's teaching me the truth. Even when it's uncomfortable, it's telling me the truth about our collective racial karma, about my own conditioning, about my own unskillful actions. So that's also Dharmakaya Buddha. That's also truth. And I can welcome that too, even if it doesn't seem so beautiful in the moment. So we have these two bodies operating, Nirmanakaya Buddha, Dharmakaya Buddha. And then there's a third body. It's called Sambhogakaya. And that translates as bliss body. So I know now I've said bliss, and maybe you're thinking, well, that's a little woo-woo, bliss body. And then we're back in these ideas about, you know, I'm just going to kind of levitate out of my chair here and like have rays coming out of my head and be in this other state. So when I was thinking about Sambhogakaya Buddha, I thought, you know what, I'm going to look up what Thich Nhat Hanh says about Sambhogakaya Buddha, because I know he'll have some kind of explanation that's just like really clear and really on point. And of course, he did not disappoint. So he says, because the Buddha practices deeply, and remember, we're all the Buddha, we all have Buddha's body, so we could say, because we practice deeply, we experience boundless peace, joy, and happiness. And Sambhogakaya is the fruit of this practice. So that's all. That's all it is. It's the fruit of practice. And that is also part of body. That's part of being bodies. So when I had my heart attack, I actually had also a deep experience of Sambhogakaya. I felt intensely joyful and peaceful. And, you know, I was noticing that, and at first I thought, oh, I just must be in shock. You know, well, I was in shock, but I've been in shock before. And it's not like that. So I felt really joyful and peaceful. And so when I was able to reflect later about why, like why, when this horrible thing happened, you know, and at first I thought, well, oh, it must be, you know, my practice is so strong. It's not that actually. But what I think it is that I had an opportunity to let go of grasping one of the fundamental things that we grasp, which is the belief in a fixed body that I somehow own and identify as mine. And when my body became ungraspable, uncontrollable, unfamiliar, unpredictable, I was able to let that go. And I felt an intense sense of joy and bliss about that, because of that. So Resma actually, I think, in his book, talks about Sambhogakaya Buddha. And so those of you that have read the book maybe are thinking, he doesn't talk about Sambhogakaya Buddha. Well, he doesn't because he's not Buddhist, he doesn't talk about that, but he talks about a concept I found really helpful, clean pain versus dirty pain. So I'm going to try to explain these for a second. Clean pain, he defines, I'm going to actually read him. He defines it as pain that mends and can build your capacity for growth. It's the pain you feel when you know what to say or do, when you really, really don't want to say or do it, and when you do it anyway, responding from the best parts of yourself. Dirty pain is the pain of avoidance, blame, or denial when you respond from your most wounded parts. So I think that's pretty clear, the difference. And I think that this talking about clean pain is another way of talking about becoming intimate with something we really fear and something from which we have previously been separated. And my experience is anytime I do that, I feel really happy, really peaceful, and really joyful when I unclench and allow myself to pass through a gate of fear. Boundless joy appears. And this is Sambhogakaya, or bliss body. It's the fruit of that practice of becoming close to these cut off, closed down, pushed away things in our consciousness, in our bodies. I think especially now, finding ways to touch Sambhogakaya Buddha are really important. I think that's especially important if our bodies have been places of pain and separation in the past. And I think that probably includes everyone. This might require a lot of help. It's required a lot of help for me. That help can be a Zen teacher, a supportive sangha, a strong practice container like a session or a practice period. It can also come in the form of a skilled therapist or a body healer, an ongoing body practice like yoga or martial arts or qigong. When I was a young adult, my consciousness was literally floating a couple of inches out of my body. My body was not a safe and comfortable place where I could settle. And so I spent many years doing all these practices I just listed so that I could come home and inhabit this body. And I really, really hope we all, especially now, can find ways that allow us to have an experience of Sambhogakaya Buddha and allow us to get the help that we need to do it. And then when we feel, this is my thing, when I feel, sometimes if I start to feel more spaciousness, more boundlessness, a little more joy, I get really suspicious. I think, huh, that's unusual. What's going on? So that's something else I think we can encourage ourselves. We can share our joy with each other. We can say those things. We don't just have to share our difficulty, but we can be sure to share our joy and happiness because that really waters those seeds in each other. And if we practice feeling joyful for others, of course, it expands how much joy we feel because we're not just limited. So, at the very beginning of the Song of Zazen, Hakuin says, from the very beginning, all beings are Buddha, like water and ice. Without water, no ice. Outside us, no Buddhas. So he's basically saying there are no Buddhas outside of beings, or we could say outside of bodies. There's no Buddhas somewhere else, really. So when we look at a chunk of ice, and we can go out, you can practice this later today, it seems fixed and solid to our eye, even if we know better. So when I look at all of you on my Zoom screen, my eye consciousness translates the pixels into little chunks of solidness, which I can label and define and categorize. You even have like We even have little labels under our boxes, right? Just to make that a little more firm. And that's okay. It's just my brain doing its thing. I don't have to hate it. But I also want to invite myself to see deeper. This very body, the body of Buddha, these very bodies, the bodies of Buddha. I'm constantly learning how to navigate this water and ice body, this Buddha body. It's a process. It's ongoing. I work with this every single day. And now we have some time to hear how others of us practice as Buddha's bodies. I'm really interested to hear if something I've said has been interesting to you or challenging or helpful, or you disagree or you agree or whatever your reaction is. And I just want to ask a couple of things. So first of all, if you feel like right away I have something to say, I'm going to ask you to make a space for just a minute or two in case someone who needs a little time to formulate a question wants to do that first. So then you can say, but I want to see if we can make a little space, because I know sometimes I hear a talk and it just takes me a couple minutes, but then it feels like the space gets really full with the fast talkers. So that's one thing. The second thing is, if you want to put your question in the chat, if it's easier to formulate a thought or reflection by writing, you can do that and I'll read those. And then finally, if you'd rather just talk to me directly, I'll stay on after the meeting. And you can just stay and then we can have a chat. So I'm going to end by reading a slightly different translation of the last stanza. So once again, you can just return to this very Buddha body and listen to this. How boundless and free is the sky of samadhi. How refreshingly bright the full moon of wisdom. At this very moment, what is there you lack? Nirvana is right here before our eyes. Where you stand is the land of purity, your person, the body of the Buddha. All right, so you're welcome to unmute or use the chat. So the first question is, where can we find this poem? Let me think what the best way to do that is. I will try to put a link in the chat box, maybe during the announcements when we're done having our conversation here. Thank you. But you can also Google Song of Zazen. There's lots of different translations. So there isn't kind of just one standard one. So maybe you can find one you like.
Will you do me a favor? Because my brain is a little addled. Will you remind? So there's Nirmanakaya. What are the three bodies again?
Nirmanakaya, Dharmakaya, and Sambhogakaya. But you could think of like the physical body, the truth body, and the bliss body.
Yeah. No, I like it. It was such a great, thank you so much for your talk. It was such a great, because we do those chants, we do the chants for the meal chants, right? And so it was just such a wonderful way to segue from, this is something we do at Sesshin, it's our meal chant. I don't think a lot about what does this mean. So it was very helpful. And I had a lot of like, aha, yes, aha. So, I mean, I have similar experiences, not exactly the same, but similar. So thank you so, so much for your talk.
You're welcome. I am typing Samboga Kaya into the chat. Someone requested that. We do chant those names during our meal chant. So someone thought those were important enough for us to know about, that we chant them twice a day during session. I'm going to read this question from Kyokujun. One of the ways that I struggle with returning to the body is when the body is in pain. Can you speak more of how to stay with the body during pain, especially what's helped you? Well, I could maybe give some advice, but I don't want to give advice. So I think what I'll say is that I notice when I label an experience in my body, I create a fixedness to it. I kind of add something extra. So sometimes I find it helpful to try to let go of the label and just be present with what's happening in terms of sensation. So I've found that really helpful with pain, but really whatever's going on. Sometimes I think it's Pema Chodron that uses a drop underneath the storyline of what it is. So that's been helpful. And then, so that's, looking deeply, but also if I have something happening in my body that's unpleasant, I also sometimes try to imagine making a larger space and noticing more of what's happening, because there's always a lot, like infinite, like more than we can understand is always happening. And so that also helps me to make more space. So that's a couple of things. Thank you for that question. Okay, the chat's very busy. I will take just one more here from the chat. I'm thinking about the difference between in the moment settling and coming into the body and the response to accumulated stress on the body with no clear trigger to indicate a separation. That's a beautiful question. So for myself, I have dealt with a lot of personal trauma and trauma in my body. And I would say one thing about settling when one's body is not a safe home to settle in is that I had to really give myself a long time. And it's never done. Like, I'm still working on this, like I said, every day. And also in my Dharma talk, when I talked about getting help, I think it's really important. So as you become, you know, maybe through meditation, through Dharma practice, if you're noticing a lot of difficulty settling, I would really encourage you to not think the way through is to forge on by yourself. There's so much help. And for me, at different times, different kinds of help was useful. Having a moving body practice, I practiced martial arts for a long time. I don't think people know this really. But that was just the thing at that time in my life. So maybe it's something like that, or maybe it's having some kind of healer or someone help you release trauma. But whatever it is, I think not trying to forge ahead like we're separated unitary beings is really helpful. I hope I'm, if I'm not answering your question, you chatted it, please say something and I could say something else. But thank you for that question. Oh, there's more. I'll do one more from the chat and then I'll take anyone have a verbal question. How do we deal with conflicting and violent truths of the body? Yeah. So one thing that's helped me, even while I was writing this talk and I was thinking about Dharmakaya Buddha, so truth, body, I was thinking that, Myoshin, you need to not be fooled that Dharmakaya, truth, body, is always easy to receive truth. Because at first, that's what I was sort of thinking. And then I realized, like, for me, for example, as a white body person, to sit with the reality of what happened, excuse me, at the Capitol and the racism underneath that and how I'm connected to that is very uncomfortable. And that's also Dharmakaya Buddha. So if I see that as a sacred undertaking, as a body of Buddha, that really gives me a lot of support to continue. So thank you for the question. Does anyone want to ask a question or make a comment verbally? I have a couple more in the chat, but.
I kind of wanted to share a story that about 5 years ago, I had a really bad back injury and it was so painful. I could not, my husband and I were trying to get me out the door to get in the car to go to urgent care. And I was just in so much pain. And I, kind of the only way I could do it, was I ended up chanting. The only chant I had memorized at the time was the one we do with the children, the Buddham Saranam Gacchami. And I ended up chanting that like really loudly as he was kind of moving me out the door. And that was how I made it happen. That's all.
It's a great story about connecting with the body you're experiencing, kind of bringing that closer to an understanding of it also as Buddha's body. It's really, really lovely. Also, chanting is very settling, right? It's really a practice of settling. When you were telling that story, it made me think of a story during a Rohatsu session. I have to give myself an injection every month. It's not like a syringe. It's like an auto pen. I'm sorry if I'm freaking anybody out. I'll stop talking about that directly. But anyway, I hate doing this. And in fact, usually I make my wife do it for me. But I was at Sushin. So I like knocked on Sosan's door. I said, could you just come and sit like 6 feet apart in the room with me while I do this? And then I just chanted the, Enmeijuku Kanengion, you know, some of you know this, Kanzeon Namu Butsuyo, while I did this, because I have to hold it. It takes about 30 seconds for the medicine to go in and it hurts a lot. So anyway, so thanks for sharing that story. I found chanting also very settling in that moment of pain. I'm going to read one more question here. Your comment about suspicion of good feeling when they arise after deep Dharma work resonated with me. Can you talk more about honoring good feelings as they arise and why we experience resistance? I'm glad I'm not the only one that has this little issue. I don't know for you. I just know for me what this is about. But since I'm dealing with the same equipment as everyone else, this might be helpful. I've thought about this a lot, why I'm so deeply suspicious, because I'm very deeply suspicious. That's almost the first thing that comes up, like joy, suspicion. Some of it for me is to get back to that cultural conditioning I talked about. I come from people that are survivor people who just buckled down and did what had to happen and shut down their feelings and got on with it. And so some of it, yeah, people, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. I honor that energy, right? I do amazing things in my life because of that energy, but I also cut myself out of a lot of happiness and relaxation, right? Relaxation, bad. So anyway, I think I can just smile at my blood ancestors, right? When I notice that. And that's what I do. When I feel that suspicion come up, I just say, I'm with you. And I thank you for your energy of hard work. Thank you. And you can rest now. You can rest. And I think we can literally say that to our ancestors if that's our story. You can rest. So that's helped me a lot. Now, I can't say for you that suspicion may come from somewhere else, but for me, that's the strongest dream that comes through. So I hope that's helpful. We have time for a couple more comments in the chat or with your voice.
I know I'm a talker. I know I already went, but I just want to say that thing you just said was probably the most powerful thing I heard all morning. The way of being tender and compassionate to myself. And you're exemplifying that. It was really powerful. Thank you.
That's it, right? And if we, when I am able to see this very body as body of Buddha, then compassion comes up.
For me, I have a comment. This is pretty simple, but it really works. The other day I was having a panic attack. Woke up at 3 a.m. My heart was just like, and I go, what do I know? All I know is just returning to the breath. And I know that if I just sit and there's a technique that I've used and that nobody's ever talked about it in the Zen Center, but where I count, I breathe in 6, hold 6, release 6, hold 6. If I do that for about 15 minutes, everything just calms down. The waters just settle. And I've used it. I mean, the breath has saved me and so many times. A few years ago, I got hit by a car and I'm sitting in the ambulance. They're hauling me off. And I think all I know is just to sit and watch my breath. And it got me through it. It's pretty simple, but it really works for me.
It is simple. That's what sometimes makes it hard for our complicated brains, right? But I remember you sharing that story about being in the ambulance after your accident. And it was a very good reminder. And as you're talking, it makes me think about how I often feel that I need to practice while I'm able as much as I can. Because those times when you're in the ambulance or your back is going out or you have people are storming the Capitol or some other calamity arises is probably not the optimal time to think, oh, maybe I should learn about how to calm myself. I mean, that's okay if that's the time, you know, good for you. But if we're able to practice settling, chanting, meditation, being in containers that are supportive, yoga, all those things, when the situation isn't so dire, then it's there for us as a resource, right? It's easier to touch in those difficult moments. So the fact that you were able to remember to breathe, I think is it's a fruit of your deep practice that you can remember. Let's see. Oh, somebody says, Martha says, thank you for talking about strategies to address trauma over time. noting the benefit of body work. Yes, you're welcome. That's because that's been true in my life. Mm-hmm. We're really, I think a lot about how fortunate we are. Just in the last few years too, I wish we would have had this earlier on in my journey, but we have such a much better understanding of trauma and how it operates. And that opens doors to healing. Anyone else? We maybe can take one more. You could be that last person. Okay. Well, I just want
to... I'm sorry to bug you, Yoshin. I was just getting my stuff together.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I'm here now. Hi. I if I may.
Yeah.
The Capitol has come up a couple times. I would remind us of how many men were had made themselves available that day to cause trouble, to cause harm. And as I think about... As I imagine myself, and I do often, having to use my body to protect other people from harm, beings from harm, a role that I know something about, but am somewhat reluctant to assume, I know that there is this accumulated trauma. Right, that back in May and June this year, I identified with as something of a gift in order to be able to make it through those couple nights of curfew in my neighborhood here, just about a mile from the Capitol, not far from the Zendo. And I'm thinking about, we joke when we go to, as we did yesterday, see friends. And I often joke about this, sort of my reluctance to be the patriarch, but my being called to be, I feel, often, again, because the way I rationalize it, I have to protect others from harm. I don't know what more to say about that or how to turn it into a question, but that's what's been sitting in my mind throughout this, and I would just offer that up.
Thank you. I think what I'm taking from your comment is the layeredness and the complexity of these things, the many bodies that we inhabit simultaneously because of our identities, the way they show up differently in different conditions. And to me, that kind of points to a Dharmakaya Buddha, the sort of deep truth that's not fixed. It's very porous. So thank you very much. I wanted to end with something I've noticed facilitators saying at the end of our being with the body classes, begin with the body classes, which is anything I've said of benefit, I'd like to offer to all beings, and anything I've said that has caused harm, I offer my deep apology. So thank you very much.